This podcast is part of the Acast Creator Network.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, "What the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass?"
So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Hello and welcome to The Stand with Eamon Dunphy. Now, Putin's war, which began on February 24th, last year now, it's heading towards its first anniversary. It has not gone well for Vladimir Putin and for Ukraine. It has been devastating in so many ways, the loss of life, the war crimes committed against civilians, the rape of women, and in many ways, it has been a terrible and continues to be a terrible situation for the Ukrainian people, but they have acquired the respect of the world, really the free world, and the admiration of almost everybody outside of the Russian orbit of influence. And in Ireland, for example, there are now 60,000 Ukrainians here, and we are giving them shelter and supporting them in whatever way we can, despite the fact that we have our own crises in the health service and, of course, the most acute crisis in housing as well. And we have covered it extensively on this podcast. And one of the people we have relied upon is Johnny O'Reilly. Johnny's an Irish journalist and filmmaker. He lives in Ukraine. He's currently in Kiev, the capital. He has traveled to the front line in Donbass and the Kherson regions, and he knows Russia very well because he lived there for some time. Johnny, thank you very much for joining us again. I want to concentrate first today on what is being described as Russia's only battlefield win since last summer, and this is in a town called Soledar and a city close by, Bakhmut. Now, the claims are that these are very important cities, and I want to know, I'm sure our listeners want to know why they're so important. The other thing that we'd like to know is about the Wagner Group, who are a group of mercenaries who have been enjoined with the Russian forces to fight Putin's war for him. First of all, is it true that Russia may gain this victory and that it will be the first victory they've had on the battlefield since last summer?
Yes, it's true. But if you step back and look at the bigger picture, you've got a front line that's, 2,000 kilometers long. And the war has settled into this battle of attrition where it looks like there hasn't been much movement anywhere in the front line apart from the big moves that Ukraine made first in Kharkiv and then in Kherson recently. But when you kind of focus in on each of those little battles, which many of these, online analysts are doing, gathering information from online chats that the soldiers themselves are reporting back, you do get a really interesting overview of what's happening, especially in the hot zones like Bakhmut and Soledar. Bakhmut is a city of about 80,000 people. Soledar, about 10 or 15,000 people. And what you get is almost like daily updates of the Russians having taken over a graveyard and an area nearby with a factory. And you get a lot of really up-to-date details about what's happening the movements that are happening around that space.
There are salt mines then there as well, aren't there, Johnny, that are said to be of some value?
Yeah, the salt mines are of great military value because they're quite vast. They have a lot of space below, which is impregnable. They can hold heavy weaponry there. They can hold tanks there. They can obviously hide their soldiers, and their soldiers can pop out at different tunnels that are like, you know, a few miles from the main mine area.
Yes.
So it's very useful launching point, and it's very hard. It's very impregnable to get around that. But Soledar and Bakhmut, 80 miles north of it, they're not prized possessions in terms of the logistics or strategic situation for the war, but they've become a very important symbolic case because so much has been invested in winning these cities, the city in the case of Bakhmut and the town in Soledar. And that's partly because in Russia, the head of the Wagner Group, Yevgeny Prigozhin, an oligarch who's very close to Putin but has no military background, he founded this mercenary group, the Wagner Group, and has now received a lot of funding and support from Putin to go and execute the war. And Putin likes to do this to have a divide and conquer approach to the people working for him so that they demonstrate increased loyalty to him in order to outflank the competitor, if you like.
Yes.
So what's happening here is he has been throwing huge amounts of human resources, cannon fodder essentially, to try and win these strategically unimportant towns in order to claim an important symbolic victory.
Yes.
And outflank the national military in order to secure increased funding and increased political support for his grouping. So that's what's happened here. He's thrown huge amounts of cannon fodder, essentially, into both Bakhmut and Soledar. But about 1 week ago, having, you know, relentlessly tried to take Bakhmut for months, they changed tack and moved a lot of their troops down south to Soledar and achieved a victory in Soledar in the hopes to outflank the city north of Bakhmut by approaching it from the south. So, yes, it looks like Soledar will fall, but it's by no means certain that it means that Bakhmut, the bigger prize, will fall soon.
Now, the overall picture we have, and it was a very interesting piece in the Sunday Times at the weekend, the headline said, Putin relies on raw recruits while Ukraine embraces Western technology, and there has been deliveries and there are deliveries on the way to help the HIMAR weapons, which are actually there. And the HIMAR is a missile system took out, we are told, 400 or 500 Russian troops last week in one blow. But the general picture we have is of Putin relying on conscripts, raw recruits, people who are untrained, and that there's a lot of trouble and a lot of comment in Russia, particularly in Moscow, and about how he has got this invasion wrong from the very first day. Nothing has worked out as predicted, and they have been losing on the battlefield more than you would imagine they should. And a lot of people are falling out of windows, Johnny. That is, Russian former soldiers, one general I read of who's 85 and retired, who had been critical of Putin, he's fallen out of a window. And I understand that an acquaintance of yours also suffered that fate. Can you explain to us, from your knowledge of Russia and, of course, your proximity to Russia right now, about these mysterious deaths? And we're talking here maybe 30, 40, 50 people since the war began.
Well, when Putin took power, he started within the FSB a group of assassins. He basically set it up himself. And this was one of the things that Litvinenko, when he was at the FSB, came out. He outed this group.
Yes.
In a very famous press conference, and within hours was on a flight exiling himself to London. So that was the act of treachery, which ultimately Putin killed him for.
Yeah, and just to explain, Johnny, that the FSB is what used to be known as the KGB. Is that correct?
That's right, yeah. The KGB was split into three, essentially. The FSB be the internal intelligence. You've got SVR, which is external, and you have the military intelligence GRU. So, but people still use the catch-all phrase, the FSB, for all three of them. But so Putin has been running these assassin squads since the first, you know, year of his presidency. And of course, the squad which specializes in poisoning was exposed by Navalny, which has been made into a, you know, the story of which is now subject to in a big documentary, which looks like it might win an Oscar. But he obviously, since the war started, has expanded that operation. Because almost weekly now, we are hearing stories of people falling out of windows, you know, all these strange deaths involving suicides and double suicides of family members who have, you know, according to their friends, have never shown any evidence of depression or anything. So it seems quite clear that there is a very active campaign targeting mostly people within the business elite in Russia who perhaps for one or other reason have chosen to exile themselves, to go against what the, you know, to demonstrate that they're not willing to toe the line in terms of business. So a lot of the people who have been killed are from the oil and gas industry, including, as you mentioned, a gentleman I knew from Moscow back in the, when I lived there. He was a guy called Dan Rapoport, who ran a nightclub in Moscow and then became quite well connected with people who had money within the regime. But he supported Navalny very early on financially. And became a big supporter of Navalny, but he was never a significant player, or certainly not even a significant political advocate. But he, like many of these others, died in very mysterious circumstances in Washington. Again, fell out of a window and left some strange suicide note.
Yeah.
So all his close friends, including his wife, believe it was a murder.
Johnny, the impression of Putin before this began, and since I think the year 2000 was when he became the Russian leader and effectively the dictator, was that he was a cool former FSB operative, that he was smart, cool, on top of everything, and that he was ruthless, of course, and unpleasant, but competent. That impression has been, in many people's eyes, shredded because of the mistakes he's made. His working assumption at the beginning on February 24th that they'd take Kiev in 3 or 4 days, they'd capture Zelensky, put in a puppet regime in Kiev, and the war would be over. I'm not in any way misrepresenting that by saying that. I'm not misrepresenting the facts.
No, that's true. But the perception of Putin outside the country is a very different story to the perception of him within his country. Yes, he did appear to be quite cool and clever for much of his reign, but now that certainly seems to be unraveling in terms of the international perception of him. But at home, it's a different story because he has such a control over the media, and there is such discipline when it comes to disseminating the talking points that the Kremlin wants.
Yes.
In order to keep the story alive that Putin is a very competent and clever leader. So he's managed to successfully imbue that impression amongst a large swathe of the population. But one would imagine that's diminishing with every month of bad news from Ukraine.
Now,
millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom. Like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
Here's a cool fact. A crocodile can't stick out its tongue. Another cool fact, you can get short-term health insurance for a month or just under a year in some states. UnitedHealthcare short-term insurance plans are designed for people who are between jobs, coming off their parents' plan, or turning a side hustle into a full-time gig. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage with access to a nationwide network of doctors and hospitals. Get more cool facts about UnitedHealthcare short-term plans at uh1.com.
Hey everyone, Craig Robinson here. I want you to check out the Ways to Win podcast, brought to you by Ford and the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. On Ways to Win, Coach Cal and I will discuss leadership lessons we've learned. We know all about the days spent perfecting your craft outside of the limelight and have knowledge to share about how strength, inspiration, encouragement, and adaptability are the key ingredients to drive toward your dreams. And those same ingredients can be found in the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. So check out my podcast, Ways to Win, and also check out the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. Learn more at Ford.com. Built Ford tough, built Ford proud.
Tired of ads barging into your favorite news podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay up to date on everything newsworthy by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/newsadfree. That's amazon.com/newsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Zelensky went to Washington. He has been in London as well. He has clearly been a very effective leader of the Ukrainian people. He is looking for more sophisticated weaponry. He is also talking about reclaiming every bit of Ukrainian territory. And whilst there is general approval among the people, the more serious and far-seeing politicians in the West believe that he has to be, to some extent, denied weaponry that would be too sophisticated and that might encourage him to escalate, to hit targets in Russia, and ultimately to be so powerful that the West couldn't control him. There is an issue there, and particularly with the Republicans gaining control of the House of Representatives, the Congress, at the weekend, many of those who are now calling the shots in that Congress don't believe that Ukraine should be funded and supported to the extent that Joe Biden has done so. In fact, that there will be a problem for the Biden administration soon when they have to lift the debt ceiling or not. And the Congress are the people who will decide that effectively. If the debt ceiling is not allowed to be raised, then the money for Ukraine may dry up.
I think that might well be overstated a little, because...
Yes, dry up is probably an overstatement. It will be diminished somewhat.
Yeah, the majority of the GOP, of the Republicans, still very much support Ukraine. And I think Zelensky's appearance in America 2 weeks ago was a hugely successful PR exercise.
Yes.
And would have would have gone some way in diminishing those arguments that are fighting for less funding for Ukraine, but certainly insofar that the extreme wing of the Republicans can impact that decision making, one would imagine that it would just diminish the funding by a small percent. But I think everything, it really depends on what happens on the ground. If Ukraine continue to press hard, continue to demonstrate that they can win this, then the backing will always be there. You know, the Americans, no matter what they believe, they want to be on the winning side.
Yeah.
But if the Russians somehow manage to turbocharge their reserves and to roll over the Ukrainians on the battlefield, then that kind of argument comes into more focus.
Yes.
So it's still down to what happens in places like Soledar and Bakhmut. But recently there has been a big uptick in the quality of technology presented to the Ukrainians. And it seems that there's no stopping the improvement in technology that the Americans are willing to provide to Ukraine. The Patriot missiles in particular are like the A-list,
yes,
you know, technology. There's nothing like those in the world. And they will have a huge impact once they are on the ground. They are described as kind of defensive items, meaning that, like, you know, they're only for destroying offensive missiles and,
yes,
offensive, but they can be very easily deployed for offensive operations as well. Because when you deploy a Patriot missile for essentially for 60 miles around that position, you have a no-fly zone.
Yep.
If any enemy flight appears in that zone over that time, it will be taken down by the Patriots. So that's significant. And also the provision of armored personnel vehicles and tanks now. These are being provided in order to give Ukraine the capability of a significant offensive operation on the ground in places like Bakhmut and Soledar.
Now, you're living in a war zone, Johnny. Much of what we see in terms of destruction of the infrastructure in somewhere like Bakhmut and other devastated towns and cities we've seen, also in terms of killing civilians, kidnapping children and civilians, taking them to Russia, all of the kind of horrible war crimes that we have witnessed in the last 10 months inflicted on the Ukrainians by Putin. And I wonder, can you explain to us the mood of the Ukrainian people now in the context of the fact that many Ukrainians, particularly in the Donbass, where there was in 2014, the Russians took a chunk of Ukraine, in Crimea as well. Can you explain how those in the Donbass and in, say, elsewhere in Ukraine, who identify as Russians, whose first language is Russian, how are they in all of this? And how much does that complicate what isn't really just a battle between the Ukrainian people and Putin, but a battle between Ukraine, which is in many of its regions Russian-speaking and regards Russia as the home?
Well, at the moment, it's not much of a complicating factor because the war is a very clear black and white zero-sum game.
Right.
Both sides are just trying to achieve victory and defeat of the enemy. Now, where it will become complicated is after victory happens, what's the lay of the land going to look like? How are they going to embrace those people who have fled the battle zone and gone east to Russia, for example, those people who feel more Russian than Ukrainian, you know, they are going to have to be embraced and brought into the fold in Ukraine somehow. And that's where things are going to be very challenging. Look, there's the pro-Russian feeling is you know, appears in very different strengths and hues across the country, largely related to how east you go in the country. But certainly many of the people who were sitting on the fence, for example, in places like Odessa, which was traditionally a pro-Russian city. Many people speak Russian there. They feel more Russian than Ukrainian. But the majority of the people there now are firmly Ukrainian patriots.
Right.
They the difficulty comes in places like the Donbass, which has been ravaged by war and also ravaged by Russian and Ukrainian propaganda. So many of those people have fled their homes. Many of them, if they ever return, will have issues over property rights. Their properties may be destroyed. Friends and family have left. Friends and family may have been injured or killed. So it's going to be extremely complicated to absorb those lands back into the Ukrainian fold and to manage the local leaders who will still remain somewhat pro-Russian.
Yes.
And that's assuming that Ukraine gets a clear victory in the Donbass, which of course may not. So all of those complications are very stark across the horizon if and when, you know, victory happens for Ukraine.
From what you know of Russia, how secure is Putin's position right now?
It's a very interesting question because it's something that's very hard to justify an analysis of this, because it really speaks to the psychology of one man and the mass psychology of a people. Yes. And how they relate to him. I am more of the belief than most analysts that his position is very weak, because the system is weak inherently.
Yes.
It's a house of cards that's based on the symbolic power of one man. So it's not the real power, it's the symbolic power. And that's what drives him. It's that power that he creates through the illusion of the virtual reality that he has concocted and created through the media and through the propaganda. So if, for example, he suffers a significant defeat in the East, in Ukraine, he will try to spin it, to turn it, to lie about it.
Yes.
And at a certain point, the lie will become so clear and so obvious that all his symbolic power will drain away very quickly. And because there's no ethnic or ideological power base in the country, that the power base really is about loyalties to the head of state, mostly through graft and corruption that, you know, he has brought people into his fold by offering them privileges to steal money, essentially.
Yes.
So those bonds are not strong. So I believe that when the end comes, it'll unravel extremely quickly and it'll be chaotic and everyone will be very surprised at how quick it happens. But, you know, my analysis is that the Russian system is a house of cards.
Yes.
And with enough pressure on the ground in East Ukraine, that the system could collapse.
Yeah. Just a final question about Kyiv, which had not been attacked or subjected to artillery destruction the way other places in Ukraine have been. But there has been recently more attacks, particularly on the infrastructure to take out water and lights and stuff like that. The mood of the people in Kyiv, in your view, are they thinking that this is a long war and we're going to be there to the end? And that might be down to what might be seen as inspirational leadership by Zelensky? Or are there moments, particularly when they're under attack, that people feel a bit wobbly?
The wobbles come when Russia achieves victory.
Put a context on this before we came on air, John, you told us you've no electricity right now. And we feel it here when electricity goes out for an hour. And it seems to be the situation you're in, and it can get worse, as we know. I'm trying to put it in that context.
Yeah. Well, humans adapt to all situations, right? And everyone's become an expert in power stations and generators in this country. And right now, for example, I'm speaking to you via a router, which is powered by a power station. So, we do suffer electrical blackouts, but most people suffer them just for a few hours every day. And actually, for the last week, there has been very few power blackouts. Now, there's a direct relationship between the amount of power blackouts in Kyiv and in many other places, direct relationship between that and the provision of high-tech anti-aircraft systems.
Yes, that's the Patriot thing you referred to earlier.
Yeah, and actually I had an interesting conversation with a friend of mine who is working on an anti-aircraft battery north of the city, just on the edge of the Kyiv Sea, which is this very large lake that stretches almost from the edge of the city up to the border with Belarus. And a lot of the drones and the missiles go down the center of that lake because they know that the anti-aircraft systems are far on each side, right, perhaps too far for many of them to knock them out. But what happened recently was that, and what has been happening is that they've been sending over a mix of both rockets, jet-fueled missiles, cruise missiles, and these smaller drones. Now, the drones have been getting through, but they're not as devastating as the larger missiles.
Yes.
So in the last barrage, 100% of the missiles were knocked out of the sky. So that was it was growing from 80%, 90%, and that was the first time they knocked out 100% of them.
Right.
There was quite a significant, there was three waves of attacks actually over the 31st and the 1st of January. But many of the drones got through because, as my friend told me, that what they do is they work in a zigzag fashion. So each drone has one operator somewhere back in Russia, probably.
Yeah, these are provided by the Iranians, aren't they, these drones? Some of them, yes.
Yeah, Russia has done a big deal with Iran to provide these drones and also to manufacture and perhaps even co-manufacture these. So far, there hasn't been a massive devastating attack on the infrastructure, like not one single one. You know, there's been small attritional attacks which have, knocked away at the capabilities of the utilities. But, obviously, what could happen is that they launch 400 drones instead of 100 drones.
Yes.
And that could have an impact. But they haven't demonstrated the capacity to do that yet. So one hopes that that's not going to happen. But to be honest, so far, the wobbles about people feeling fear have been very few and far between because all the facts in terms of the small victories on the battlefield and the major victories in the battlefield have mostly been in Ukraine's favor so far. Now, that doesn't mean that Russia, which with its huge, vast reserves, cannot somehow muster up a significant victory. They just haven't done it yet.
Okay, Johnny, it's fascinating to talk to you, and you have our admiration, and I'm sure the admiration of all our listeners. Johnny O'Reilly is an Irish journalist and filmmaker living in a war and reporting on it very, very well indeed. Thank you, Johnny. Thanks to all of you who listened. That's all we have time for now. We'll talk to you soon.
Hold up.
Tired of ads barging into your favorite news podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay up to date on everything newsworthy by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/newsadfree. That's amazon.com/newsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hey, everyone. Craig Robinson here. I want you to check out the Ways to Win podcast, brought to you by Ford and the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. On Ways to Win, Coach Cal and I will discuss leadership lessons we've learned. We know all about the days spent perfecting your craft outside of the limelight and have knowledge to share about how strength, inspiration, encouragement, and adaptability are the key ingredients to drive toward your dreams. And those same ingredients can be found in the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. So check out my podcast, Ways to Win, and also check out the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. Learn more at Ford.com. Built Ford tough, built Ford proud.